Maggie, thank you so much for coming onto the podcast today.
Thank you. Appreciate you having me.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. So for the audience, could you explain who you are and what you do?
Yeah. So I'm Maggie DeWitty. I'm the director of Pulse Life Advocates. We were formerly Iowans for Life, and we did a name change when we hit our 50th anniversary. So we've been in existence here in Iowa since 1972. And our mission is to educate Iowans on the sanctity of human life from fertilization until natural death.
Wow. 50 years. My goodness. So wait a minute. No, 50. It's been what? 54 years now,
54
right?
54 now. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Wow. That's incredible. That's incredible. Yeah. So yeah, just for myself and for the fellow Iowans, thank you so much for what you do. I know that you're at the Capitol and really pushing for life and the pro-life bills and such. So thank you so much for what you do.
Well, thank you. Mm-hmm.
I want to jump into this with the first area of discussion. So this past legislative cycle, we had it was quite an interesting one, to say the least. So we had the abolitionist conference here in Des Moines, and shortly after that, Representative Deacon was able to get a bill in for life at conception. It included prosecution of the mother and such, and it seemed to get a lot of pushback, and then we had a life of conception bill that didn't go anywhere, a different life of conception bill. So we had two of them. And then from there, we had a chemical abortion pill debate, and that bill subsequently got passed. So I think it'd be very interesting to hear your perspective on essentially what transpired this legislative cycle.
Sure. Well, you know, every year, we as Pulse Life Advocates and the Coalition of Pro-Life Leaders, which is a kind of a, you know, a coalition of several different pro-life and pro-family organizations across the state, come together and we look at, you know, what are going to be our number one priorities for this session and try to come in together as one voice in unity representing the pro-life movement in Iowa. And every year, and I've been with Pulse now, this May will be 17 years. Wow. And when I first started, you know, the pro-life movement in Iowa was very disjointed. You know, groups were kind of doing their own thing and not a lot was being accomplished, unfortunately. And so this coalition has really been a good thing for Iowa, a good thing for the pro-life movement, for us to kind of be together in unity. So that, all that being said, we come together and say, what are our priorities? In every single session, our number one priority has been and will always be life at conception.
Yes.
And so that's what we go for. That's our gold standard. That's the number one. I mean, all of our organizations, myself included, you know, our goal is to end abortion. And we want to do whatever we can to accomplish that. So we always step forward with life at conception, but we also have other priorities that we're hoping to achieve as well if we're not able to get the life at conception. And so our number two priority was trying to figure out how we can put some safeguards and regulations back on the abortion pill, because we know, like here in Iowa and nationwide, it's a plague. You know, over 80% of the abortions in Iowa are chemical induced and women are being harmed. And so we were wanting to figure out how we can, you know, rein that in a little bit. And then our third priority has been to continue to get funding for the many pregnancy resource centers in Iowa, over 50, to give them some funding so that they can help women who are in crisis pregnancies. And so that's generally what we always go forward. And so with this session, you know, we went forward with our life at conception. We had Representative John Dunwell, who was willing to sponsor the bill, and he moved it forward. We had a subcommittee scheduled, and then it got canceled. And so that was a huge blow, because we thought,
yes,
wow, maybe this could happen. You know, we were really dreaming that, oh my gosh, could we be out of a job? Could we get this job done? You know, And when it was canceled, it was pretty heartbreaking to have that happen. And at the same time, as you mentioned, we had another bill by Representative Deacon. A lot of similar things in the bills. One major difference is the prosecution of women. And that's something as our organization and as the coalition in general, you know, we wanted to move forward with the bill that Representative John Dunwell was presenting that aligned with, you know, our values in terms of what we wanted to do moving forward.
Yeah. Yeah, that definitely, I actually scheduled off of work to go speak at the subcommittee for the Life of Conception bill that Representative Dunwell was going to do the subcommittee for. I was very disheartened when that bill got canceled, or that subcommittee got canceled. And really, in effect, the entire bill ended there, kind of hit that roadblock. So walk us through then. I'm trying to understand a little bit better because from my perspective, we have, you know, supermajority or nearly supermajority in the Iowa House. We have, I think, one away from a supermajority in the Senate, and we have the governor's seat. So, I mean, there's a real threat. I've talked to several people. There's a real possibility that the governor's seat could flip this year, at which time, I mean, it's at least another 4 years before we have a Life of Conception bill. And I mean, at that, we're not really guaranteed to have the House or the Senate to be able to pass that 4 years from now. So my perspective and that of my listeners was, if not now, when? And so walk me through what was going through your mind the day that you heard that the subcommittee was canceled. Was there communication between the Republican leadership and the coalition of pro-life leaders?
You know, after the fact, unfortunately, after the fact, I think most of us learned, you know, when it was canceled, not before. And that was also disappointing because, you know, we had set out action alerts. We had, you know, kind of rallied the troops.
I got one.
Hey, this is happening. Let's go, you know, show up at the Capitol, show your support, all of the things. And so to learn about it after the fact, you know, was hard. It would have been hard before too, don't get me wrong, but no, we did not, we didn't learn about it until it was over. And, you know, your statement that you just made, you know, if not now, when, is then the question of the day for the last, you know, how many years that we've had the trifecta. And it is so disheartening because I think two things we keep hearing from our pro-life majority, they say they're pro-life majority, is that we don't have the votes. And so it doesn't quite add up to us, especially when you have Republicans who are running on the fact that they are pro-life, but yet we don't continue to have the votes to move forward the foundational bill that would end abortion in our state. And they keep talking about polling and that abortion doesn't poll well and it's an election year and all the excuses. And I think that just reaffirms to us that we need to be super vigilant when people are running for office and they say, I'm pro-life, to actually understand what does that mean.
Yes.
It's very easy to say, yes, I'm pro-life. But it's another thing to actually say, what does that practically speaking mean? If it comes, push comes to shove, are you going to support ending abortion? Are you going to go and go to the mat for this issue? And until we hear that, I think we need to be very vigilant about who we are electing, because I think we've given a lot of people a pass on just saying, yeah, I'm pro-life. And when it comes down to it, they're not following up on what we elected them to do. And I firmly believe that we are a pro-life state and that these representatives were elected because they said that they were pro-life. And they ran on that and we believed that. And so them not following through on that is a real disappointment, to say the least. And you, yep. you're absolutely right. We have no guarantee this governor race has everyone very concerned about what's yes. going to happen. And we have no guarantees that we're going to continue Republican control in the Senate and the House. And so that was the time. Last year was the time. The year before that was the time. Because we don't have the guarantees. And we know the Democrats have absolutely told us what they will do when they get in control. Oh, for sure. And all of our work thus far could be wiped away should we flip this to Democrat control. And so it's going to be a wake-up call, I think, unfortunately, for a lot of us in this state as to what's going to happen. And I don't have the answer. I wish that I could say that somehow having this Republican control, because a lot of people say, what's the point of it? What's right. the point of having the Republican control if you're not going to follow through on your campaign promises and actually end abortion?
Yeah. And I've talked to several people who got to the point of saying they'll vote Democrat, because that's just lunacy in my mind. But I've talked to several people that say that depending on who the candidates are, they won't go vote this cycle because they're so disheartened by these mm-hmm. types of topics. So I really think that this was a, well, you had mentioned earlier that a lot of the Republicans were elected because they promised to end it. I go to church with a senator who last year risked his entire career on the eminent domain piece. Was one of the 11 that forced the vote on eminent domain. And then, of course, we see that the Republican leadership removed them from key assignments and such so that they wouldn't be able to do that again. Mm-hmm. But it's to that level of saying, you know, there was several people who decided to risk their entire career, their entire political career, some of them really before it even got started, with that being their first go around in the Senate, on eminent domain. And then now we're going life at conception, and we can't get the Republicans to do what they say and to do what they said that they would do. And so I think that's a huge thing of there's a lot of discouragement, which is one of the reasons why as soon as I started seeing that, I'm like, I need to get some pro-life people onto this podcast to keep that momentum going forward, to say, hey, we've got the primary coming up. Pin these candidates down on what they believe, and will they actually fight for it?
Right.
So yeah, I think this is a huge thing that really has taken the wind out of a lot of Christian conservatives' sails. And I mean, the Bible's clear on it too. I can't quote the verse right off, but there's a verse that says, "To him that knows to do good and doesn't do it, it's sin to him." And in context, it's talking about the urgency of doing good, because we're not guaranteed tomorrow. And in this case, I go, you know, we're not guaranteed the, you know, quote unquote, the legislative tomorrow. So if right. we have the supermajority now to do it, why didn't we do it? And I really appreciate you being up at the Capitol and sending out those alerts and such to really bring the base in to say, hey, we've got, you know, this is something we need to fight for. It's very discouraging to see then that the people that promised us that they would pass this really dropped the ball, to be perfectly frank about it, on this life at conception bill. So just to be clear then, you didn't get notified. There was no sort of like, I hate to say it this way, there was no like strategic reason for the life at conception bill getting killed?
I mean, no, I think that, you know, you had two life at conception bills. Representative Deacons didn't get any chance, even a subcommittee or anything, even though it did have some sponsors on his bill as well. We were hopeful, but I don't know that there was any strategy other than the fact that we continued to hear that they weren't going to bring something forward that didn't have the votes. Mm. You know, and that's their strategy, I guess. That wouldn't be my strategy, because I would want them to bring it forward so I could see who would vote no.
Yes. Yeah. Put the names next to the voting no. You know, put those names there so we can vote them out of office and put people in that will fight for life.
Right. And that's the hard thing for us, is because we can speculate who may have not supported it. But without it going to the vote, we have no way of actually bringing that information forward to Iowans to say, these are the people that voted against life at conception. These are the people that we need to get out of office. And so they tie our hands in that way. And that's really unfortunate that they do that, because we can't have we can't put out rumors. We've got to have the facts.
Right.
And the only way you can do that is by seeing a vote.
Yes. Yeah. So then where would you say that we sit, given that we didn't get life at conception bill passed this year, but we did get the chemical abortion pill, passed, or the bill passed for it. Where do you say in Iowa, where are we on the roadmap for life? We overturned Roe. We got the heartbeat bill passed. You know, where are we? Are we 40% done, 60% done?
Well, you know, comparatively to some of our neighbors, Minnesota, Illinois, we're in great shape.
Yeah.
New York, California. You know, we've made some really good strides. I mean, really good strides. And when you look at when I started in the pro-life movement, which was in 2000, we had almost 26 Planned Parenthoods in Iowa across the state.
Wow.
Now we're down to three. Three too many, but that's a big jump.
That's a
just
huge
right
step
there.
Forward. Yes.
Yes. Now we know, as I've stated, you know, the chemical and the online is really the plague right now. But the fact that we're down to three, we defunded Planned Parenthood from the sex ed. We have now put a stranglehold on their telehealth. It is telemarketing, telehealth.
It really is.
Through Planned Parenthood, we're chipping away a little bit more on that piece of it. But always, again, I mean, you know, I already know my number one priority, once again, is going to be life at conception. Obviously, depending on what happens with, you know, the elections and with the governor race and all the things, no matter what, whether we lose control or not, because for the number of years that we didn't have control or it was a split control, we still brought forward the bills.
Yeah.
Because that's what we have to do, because that's the right thing to do. Regardless of who is in control, we're going to bring that life at conception. But also with the chemical abortion, our bill that we had presented was a good, solid bill. What got passed was only part of it. There were some things that were stripped out of that black market abortion pill bill that I want to see us working on next session. Two of the things that were pulled from that black market abortion pill, one was the informed consent about abortion pill reversal. Mm-hmm. That was taken out of the bill, and that can save lives. And so that was a real disappointment to me, because I gave them a lot of good, solid information about the effects of the abortion pill reversal and how effective it is. The other piece that was taken out was the reporting of complications. Mm. And we continue to hear from the other side that the abortion pill is safe as Tylenol. And our point was, well, let's prove that. Let's actually require the state to report adverse effects, because we know that they're there based on the study that was just put out by the Ethics and Public Policy Center, that 1 in 10 women who ingest the abortion pill will have a severe adverse event. Severe meaning sepsis, infection, hemorrhaging. And that data was ascertained through over 800,000 insurance claims. That's how they were able to find that information.
An unbiased source of, it's not like a pro-life organization that did this study. This is an unbiased health insurance source that said these are issues.
Exactly. So they come through all of that, put this report together, and we, you know, we provided that report to all of the legislators, you know, saying this is really dangerous. And so how do we combat that? Is we have to report these, we have to have a requirement that these complications be reported, which is currently not happening in Iowa. And so unfortunately that piece was taken out. And so in addition to our life at conception, those two pieces of that bill, I want to continue to push because that will be, that would be the full spectrum of what we had originally wanted with our abortion pill bill. So to me, those are going to be two major, major things. And additionally, ensuring that we continue to have the funding for the moms program, more options for maternal support. So we still have work to do. Obviously, we're going to have work to do until we can say, like the 14 other states across the country who have eliminated and outlawed abortion, you know, we have work to do until we can get to that point. And to be clear, because I know that sometimes there's been these issues or these sentiments that the pro-life movement doesn't really want to end abortion and that this has become, you know, kind of a money-making situation. We are out to end abortion and I am out to work myself out of this job.
Yeah.
I would be very happy to do something else. You know, this is not something that that I want to continue to do. I want to end abortion, and the pro-life groups in Iowa feel the same way. We don't want to have women hurt. We want to save children and save families and save women, and we want to see an end to this abortion scourge.
Yep. You mentioned that those two pieces were taken out of the chemical abortion pill or the bill. It seems to me that those two things would really drive an ability to change minds on the topic. So if we're talking about, say, like the consent, or excuse me, not the consent, but the health insurance report that you said, these are issues. That seems to me that that would cause women to maybe reconsider their choices. Additionally, the reversal, it seems to me that that would also be a way to change hearts and minds to say, maybe this pill is not as good as, or as safe as what has been marketed. So it's interesting to me that it was stripped out when that could really change the hearts and minds, especially when Iowa used to lead. And I say used to lead because I think that we've kind of lost our place a little bit in the leadership. We were one of the first states to pass the heartbeat bill. We, you know, the whole She's a Baby campaign came out during that same time frame, close to a decade ago now. And, you know, the what's that, that video that is required to be shown? Yeah. So we used to lead on these things, and all of those were meant to change hearts and minds to saying this is a baby and it's actual murder of an innocent little baby. It's interesting now that we're pulling back on that, not really working to change those minds anymore. Right. Am I accurate on that, or is that completely off base?
Well, I think what happened, my understanding of what happened of why those two pieces were pulled from the bill was the medical community, the medical lobby had come in and had concerns about abortion pill reversal because, and we've tried for years to get abortion pill reversal, a requirement that when a woman goes in to have an abortion, she is informed of the chance to have a reversal. So this has been something we've been trying to pass for years and years. And the medical community has stepped in to say that right when we do some of these subcommittees and committees, the medical community is saying, well, this is fake. This is fake science. This is bunk. This doesn't really work. It's actually harmful to women. You know, they don't want to have any of that information out there. And the simple fact of it is the abortion pill reversal is progesterone. That's what APR is, abortion pill reversal, and progesterone has been used for women's reproductive health care since the 1950s. You know, if a woman goes in and is having symptoms of a miscarriage while she's pregnant, what's the protocol? Give her progesterone, because the progesterone will help save the pregnancy. And that's what abortion pill reversal, what the process is you're giving women progesterone. So there's no health issues with that. It's a natural hormone that women's bodies produce, and it helps sustain a pregnancy. So when you've taken that first abortion pill, if you go in within that certain time frame before you've taken the second one, you have a chance of reversing the effects of that pill and saving the life of your unborn child. And we have many reported cases across the country of children that are here because of abortion pill reversal. And so why the medical community has taken that stance, it's really unfortunate, but that is what has happened, is the medical community came in and had issue with those two pieces of the bill. And unfortunately, that's what caused those portions of the bill to be taken out.
Yeah. Can you still hear me? My camera, I think, just shut off.
Yeah. Your camera, okay. I can't see you, but I can hear you.
Okay. We'll just keep going then. I don't know what went on there, but yeah. Oh, well. So yeah, that's very interesting that the medical lobby came in and talked about these things, and the people that proclaimed pro-life values and such, well, I'll just say it this way, caved to the medical lobby when the medical lobby is the one that is also opposed to pro-life bills to begin with.
Interesting. You take out those two pieces of the bill, I can guarantee you the medical lobby still wouldn't support it. So no matter what you took from the bill, I highly doubt the medical lobby would ever support a pro-life bill. So,
right.
Yeah.
That's quite interesting. So let me ask you this then. What is the goal for the pro-life movement? And the kind of the heart behind why I ask that is I think the broader movement is at risk of losing our way. For years, we fought for the overturn of Roe, and every decision was let's overturn Roe. And then we got that passed. And then it seems like from there, a lot of the Republicans have just kind of taken a step back. And I wonder if they've taken a step back because the grassroots is not as organized or think that maybe we're winning. And so they're not applying that prayer that used to at the overturn of Roe. So what would you say is a good thing that we need to start rallying behind? What's the end goal that we're trying to accomplish now?
Right. Well, it's a good point that you made, because when we did see the end of Roe, when Roe was overturned via the Dobbs decision, we had a lot of misunderstanding about what that meant. And there were many people that did think, oh, congratulations, your job is done. Yeah. Let's just fold up the tent and go home. They really thought that that was the end of abortion in our country. And it ended federal abortion law. But obviously, what I'd said earlier is it put the abortion decisions on how to regulate or in some cases eliminate abortion back into the hands of the states. So that is why you have 14 states that have eliminated abortion. You have other states that are sort of like Iowa that have pretty strict restrictions, like our heartbeat law and 24-hour waiting period, and now the chemical abortion and some of those things, to vastly different, like in California and New York and Minnesota and Illinois, which essentially have eliminated any restrictions on abortion. Yep. and have, you know, abortion up to the point of birth and beyond. And so that is the concern with Roe being overturned, is some people still say it should be in the hands of the state. But the problem is if you really look at the big picture of what we believe, is that all life is made in the image of God. All life has dignity and worth, and it is a life, and therefore it should be protected. Then it shouldn't matter whether that life is born in Iowa or born in Illinois. And now what we've determined is, well, your life isn't as valuable if you're in Illinois as mm-hmm. it is in Iowa. And we saw that it didn't work with slavery.
Yeah.
So how are we ever going to make that work here? It's a life, it's a life, it's a life. And it doesn't matter what state you're living in. So I think big picture, we do have to wrap our minds around the fact that it still does continue to be a federal issue. Mm-hmm. Because if you truly believe that life has dignity and value and should be protected from the moment of fertilization, then we have to look at more of a federal issue. That being said, that doesn't mean that we just throw in the towel, because we still need to continue to move forward here in Iowa. And that's exactly what the pro-life movement is going to do. You know, we're going to charge forward with what we can do. You know, it can become overwhelming for people to think, how in the world can I do something? This issue is so massive, and you've got, you know, all over the country and all of these things happening, and you've got abortion pill bills and you've got life at conception. What can I do? And I always say, just really reel it in, and you just look at your sphere of influence. Mm-hmm. Don't get overwhelmed with everything that is surrounding. Look at your sphere of influence and what can you do to impact and to educate about life with your family, with your community, with your church, with the state legislatures, with your city legislatures, because every person taking on their little piece makes a big difference. And when Yes. you're talking about laws, those legislators, number one, they also need to be educated. But Mm-hmm. number two, they listen to their constituents. They listen to their constituents more than they do the lobbyists. And when their constituents are calling and saying, this is an important issue, and enough people call, they're going to take note of that. Their staffers count how many people call on certain issues or email on certain issues. And if enough people are doing that, that is what's going to make the difference. And I think we've become a little bit, before Roe was, we had a lot of apathy. You know, it was like, you know, this is the law of the land. There's nothing we can do about it. Then when Roe got overturned, then it was like, well, it's a done deal. We don't need to worry about it. So now we're back to, yes, we do need to worry about it. And you need to do your part. Because I will tell you, they get all kinds of calls from the other side.
Yeah,
we need to be doing our part to support them in truth and love, not anger, but in truth and love, and say, this is an important issue. And we want you to be representing us in Iowa. And we want you to take a stand on this important issue. And so to me, that is where we need to be at right now.
Yeah, I think what you're saying is spot on, because a lot of people, myself included in the past, would give money, would donate, and then would elect people that say that they would support life at conception. And then I'd wash my hands of it, go about my day. You know, I've got a family, work, whole nine yards. Mm-hmm. And so I think that, you know, one of the things that I would recommend is, and I'm signed up for it now, is going out to Pulse Life Advocates, Iowa Right to Life, really any coalition of pro-life leaders, websites, and sign up for their call to actions, because the whole subcommittee thing, you know, I had gotten that alert. That was something that I had scheduled off of to go talk at the subcommittee because in large part because of those calls to action. And then I think that that allows people to really understand what's going on. You know, it's people's full-time jobs are trying to understand what's going on in the legislature. And so it gets very overwhelming, but to listen to organizations like yours and follow through with the action that your organizations encourage to do, I think is a great, great step.
Yeah.
So, yeah, go ahead.
I was just going to say, you know, that's so true. I mean, we need people getting more involved in our grassroots efforts, not just at the Capitol. You know, we're talking about changing hearts and minds, right? And that does happen at the Capitol, but it also happens in our communities, in our churches. And so we strive, I mean, our efforts at Pulse always are foundational in prayer and education and action. You know, that's sort of our approach with anything that we do. And so every year when we assess what we're going to do, we're looking at those three efforts. And we have stuff going on almost every month. I mean, when the session is over, you know, we're on the go. You know, like this summer we have our June 20th prayer for or March for Life at the Capitol. We're at the state fair. We need volunteers for the state fair. That's our largest outreach. Then you go into our 40 Days for Life campaign where we're praying outside of Planned Parenthood and Respect Life Month. And then we go into our fundraising gala. And so, I mean, then we take people to Washington, D.C. for the National March for Life in January.
Wow.
I mean, we've got stuff going on almost every month at Pulse Life Advocates that people could get involved in, get more educated, be more prayerful about it. But then also it equips you to take action. Because I think a lot of times people feel like, I don't know what to say. I don't understand. Well, that's why we're here. We can't do it all, but we can equip you to do your part.
Yes. Yes. That is so good because, I've actually got this. Let's hear. Yep. Got it in the mail. It's phenomenal. So I'd highly recommend going to that. My wife and I will be going to that. And I had mentioned it to you in communication, but I'll be sponsoring one ticket to somebody, one of my listeners who shares this episode and such to go to it. Because I think it's very important that we really buckle down. Do not think that, well, we've won, we can let our foot off the accelerator. Like, this is something, if we are more empowered as a state now to end abortion in our state than we've ever been, the overturn of Roe. Mm-hmm. Now we need to do it.
Right.
So, right. Yeah, Maggie, thank you so much for coming onto the podcast, giving your thoughts and such. I really appreciate it. You're always welcome onto the podcast. If you ever want to talk about anything, just hit me up and we'll have that conversation.
Yes. Well, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure and I look forward to talking with you again soon.
All right. Absolutely. Thank you, Maggie.
Thank you.